Okay, I'm just going to find a place. We had a very late night yesterday. The Bhakti Center in Mantrology, they put on an event every month called New York City Kirtan. I think that's what they're calling it now. And now they have it, it's 6 hours. It's very, very practical. So they have it at the Broome Street Temple. Among other things, that's where Kastuba, I was there, Jayadvaita Swami, a couple of years ago, we installed Radha Damodar deities. It's a beautiful, beautiful temple, and Gauravani and Ananda and Achyuta. Kulpa Bhikshu is there doing kirtan also. Very, very enlightening. So we can get back to about midnight. And then there's one next month at a place called the Own Factory. A lot of people come. And the place is pretty much packed. And then the person who runs that, he's an architect in New York, and he was in Vrindavan with me. Someone brought him, called me up, so I'll also go over there. Okay, now let's get to the section where we're at right now. It'll take me a minute or two to One second. Reading from Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Volume 1, Chapter 7, Text 97. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Adrishyamane Chamayi Pradipta Diyoga Vanyir Vikala Kadachit Mita Ivon Mata Atakatachit Vichitra Bhavam Maduram Bhajante. And when they cannot see me, they become so torn that the fire of separation leaves them sometimes as though dead and sometimes as though insane. Thus they partake of the nectar of wonderful ecstasies. Commentary: in this verse, Krishna defends himself against the accusation that he is ungrateful to have abandoned the residents of Braja. What the Brajavasis feel because of Krishna's absence is a concentrated agony similar to the burning heat of fire. They lose control of their wits and sometimes seem on the verge of death, showing no external signs of life. At other times, they seem afflicted by madness, but Krishna explains that these are all signs of the highest devotional ecstasy. Om Jnana Timanandasya Jnananjana Shilakaya Raksurimavitsam Jena Vajnai Sri Gurave Maha Vayagyaya Bhakti Vasam Kayatnai Apaya Mamana Bipsamandam Kutambhukiya Paradhuka Bhukhi Sanatana Sam Bhagamatyami Ancha Kopa Guru Gyasya Kripa Sindhu Vayevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we're in the part of the Vyad Bhagavatamrita on Narada's search. We're in Dwarka. Krishna's come back from another Vrindavan to Dwarka. He's greeted by the queens, but he doesn't see one of the queens, Satyabhama, who is upset with him because of the ecstasies he expressed in Navabrindavan to the facsimile gopis, where the fullest revelation of his heart, a revelation that even the queens have never seen before, because their love is checked by certain social formalities, having to deal with their pati or husband, who happens to be the king. And therefore, the ecstasies or reciprocation of Krishna with them, although so intense and so beautiful and so sweet, is somewhat limited by those formalities. So the other queens, in a particular mood of more submissive love, chastity, were appreciative of the beauty of Krishna, which had been enhanced by his happiness in association with the gopis. But Satyabhama, being the more contrary love, and actually a manifestation of Srimati Radharani in Dwarka, has some type of anger. Krishna, who is usually somewhat fearful of Satyabhama's mood and that type of relationship, now is drawing the line. And he calls Satyabhama, and now he's in the process of describing why he loves the gopis so much and how their love is unparalleled and expressed in such a deep mood of viraha bhava, mood of separation, that is so deep and such a reflection of their love that mood is constitutional within him. And that mood of separation, which is an expression of deep attachment for him, is a special and exclusive ecstasy bestowed upon the gopis, the residents of Vrindavan, and no one else. It's a love, it's an attachment, it's an ecstasy that is unparalleled and only bestowed upon one by the extraordinary special mercy of Sri Krishna. And therefore, when Narada hears about the unparalleled extent of the gopis' love. Nara realizes, and he's going to realize further and further, that the goal of his journey has been found. And his journey is to find those who have the topmost recipients of Krishna's mercy, which is obviously those whose force of love brings out the most in Krishna, and who in response to that revelation of Krishna experience the deepest ecstasies. So Krishna now is explaining to Satyabhama, and also in terms of the story or text, bringing it to the Siddhanta. Anta means end, Siddhanta, the perfectional end, the conclusion, which is the philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, promoted by these six Goswamis, that Krishna is the highest and original and ultimate revelation of the ultimate reality. And the ones who inspire that and are recipients of that are the residents of Vrindavan. And he's explaining to Satyabhama and also clearing up a philosophical quandary among the Gaudiyas, and even brought up in this text, why, if Krishna loves the residents of Vrindavan so much, he doesn't return to Vrindavan. And he's explaining that their separation is unparalleled. And they experience it even in union with him. Sanatana Goswami quotes the last verse of the 10th canto, where Krishna is in Dwarka, and how even though they're with Krishna, even the queens of Dwarka are experiencing intense separation from him. Well, Krishna explains that this is the deepest love. We all in the world perhaps have experienced some attachment, some infatuation, some romance, some whatever, some motherly love, or the anxieties in that, those attachments, the fears in those attachments, the joys in those attachments. But this is a reflection of the purest love to the ultimate degree. And the Sanatana Goswami in this story is trying to give us a vision of it. It's so overwhelming, it's so high, that one is always in fear of losing the object of one's love, even in the presence of one's love. But that love is so high that in that separation, and in the special ecstasy of that separation, one, Krishna physically manifests also on an ultimate level, in a realm that is beyond the laws of nature, and doesn't operate according to the rules of time and space, which we are subjected to, and everyone else in this world who we see is subjected to. but it doesn't rule the absolute realm, because that's the definition of the absolute realm. It's independent. It's not subject to any laws except the will of the absolute reality. And that will of the absolute reality to enjoy unlimited love. And how it's expressed, Sanatana Goswami is trying to give us some direction or framework to understand, so that we can move in terms of the practices and inspiration to attain that type of love and actually experience it and understand it from that platform, which will clear all our doubts about that type of love. So, it's been described to read the previous paragraph, the last paragraph of the last verse, because I do believe it expresses the culmination of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Although we do have a good 100 pages, which would probably take us the rest of the summer even. The state of affairs is the greatest glory of the residents of Vraja. Of course, the devotees of Krishna in Vraja feel special ecstasy when they join with him directly in the spontaneous pastimes found nowhere else. Nevertheless, the special pure love born of separation from him rises within them most of the time. The Vrajavasis are the special recipients of super excellent Viraha Bhava, which is his greatest mercy, Parama Mahatva, because it is filled with the highest happiness, carried to the ultimate extreme. Although everyone in this world lives in separation from Krishna, only the Vrajavasis fully experience Raha Bhava. Their special ecstasy of separation from Krishna is obtained only by his special mercy and only after very intimate association with him. And now, Krishna is going on, and when they cannot see me, they become so torn that the fire separation is dead. Sometimes is dead, sometimes is insane, as though insane, but they partake of the nectar of wonderful ecstasies. So this is the contradiction that devotion and love, pure devotion, Shuddha Bhakti, pure love, prema, is the essence of the Lord's eternal potency, and essence of Shakti to give him pleasure. And it's churned from the heart of the devotee by various bhavas or experiences, which are inspired by certain emotions, including separation and fear, and I lose my anxiety, so many emotions. But they heighten the bhava, the sai bhava, one's particular love of Krishna, and they bring it to the highest degree. So it's anxiety, but it's ecstasy. It's the anxiety is increasing the love, and the love is the ecstasy. I'm not sure who gave this analogy. I think it's somewhere in the Acharyas, but anyway, there's a phenomenon called hot ice. When I grew up in New York City, in Brooklyn, And, you know, we would play, so many people, you know, Brooklyn is crowded, but we play on the streets. Whatever game we have, or in the backyard. And then we'd hear the bell of the good humor truck. And we'd run to our mothers to get 15 cents or whatever it is to buy an ice cream or something. You know, it was one of our lilies or plays. And another one of our lilies or plays was, is we'd ask the good humor man for some dry ice. I don't know what dry ice is, but it's how they keep the ice cream fresh and cold. You know, it opens up the little door. It's like a freezer in the back of the truck. It's funny, that doesn't happen anymore. The truck's coming around with ice cream or things. People just stock up their refrigerators, whatever it is. And then you'd ask him, can I have a little bit of the dry ice? And then you'd go to a friend and you'd press it, and it had an effect that it would burn one. So it was cold, but it had the opposite effect. It's the same thing. It's anxiety, but it has the opposite effect. It doesn't negate that it's these experiences. It has the opposite effect. It's in consciousness, it creates the highest ecstasy. Swimming in the ocean of unlimited love and pleasure. And we know how constitutional that is to our soul, even if we may seek it in ways that are temporary. The greatest pleasure is love. Eric Fromm, in The Art of Loving, makes a very, very brilliant point. He describes, there's just two points that are very relevant to that I'll share with you. So the problem in the modern world is people are searching for love. But what they're searching for is rather than be loving, they think that love is to be loved. But the real love is being loving. And then he described that love is something that's a product of effort. It's not just a sentiment. And he said when you take it as a sentiment, then your love just becomes a product of some infatuation that ends. And if that's the basis of getting married, then it ends in divorce. The search for this romance, which will be temporary. You go to one, you go to another, you go to another. But that real love is previously what they would do is they'd find some match, the people didn't have romance, and then the love would develop. And I see, you know, sometimes they call my parents' generation the greatest generation. But I know one thing, they did a lot better in relationships than we see today. Mostly because, you know, somehow they stayed together over 50 years. And they developed great affection for each other. It doesn't mean they didn't fight and didn't have trouble. But they worked on something together, a life together. And they develop the mutual affection. Anyway, that in its purest form, to its greatest intensity, its greatest pervasiveness, its greatest duration, is prema bhakti. Even there, these are called vichari vows. It means that one has a particular relationship from Krishna, and according to that relationship, there's a number of 33 emotions that come from the ocean of one's perfected love for Krishna. And it's described as an incredible churning because some of the emotions are compatible with each other. So it's like an ocean, which is heightened by waves. And the wave that comes after it heightens the preceding one. But then there's waves that sometimes clash against each other. Rupa Goswami describes this great science. But he describes this ultimate reality as a constant, intense churning of the sentiment of affection for Krishna in the most dynamic and most intense and most uncontrolled way. So one of those symptoms is Mithyu, that in relationship to the object of your love, perhaps in separation, you want to die. Because the pain of death is less than the pain of separation of your beloved. But because your existence has some value and some pleasure to the object of your love, one will stay alive nonetheless. So one goes into a state where there's just a hair breadth of consciousness, and one burns in a fire of separation, and one's ecstasy and love heightens to that degree. So Krishna is explaining to Satyabhama what this love looks like. And this If they see a patch of darkness resembling my complexion, embrace it and kiss it, mistaking it for me. What more can I describe? So this is called, what is it? Madanayaka Mahabhag. The highest stage of prema is Mahabhag. The great emotion. And that affection heightens to the highest degree. And then sometimes Krishna is there in an anxiety that he will leave. One doesn't see Krishna. Well, sometimes Krishna has left, and in the hankering for him, one sees Krishna, even if Krishna is not there. So it's trying to give some type of frame of reference that this is ecstasy and love to the highest degree, and it ravages the body and consciousness. When the devotees of Vrindavan, especially the young gopis, see a shadow or a dark place that reminds them of Krishna's spotless dark blue complexion, they think that Krishna is standing before them. What else they do besides trying to kiss and embrace the shadow? Krishna would rather not describe because some of his hearers might be unqualified to understand and others may be plunged into bliss, into distress. Even if he were to return to his devotees in Vrindavan and grace them with his presence, he would be powerless to soothe them and enliven them. And even in his absence, the Brajavasis sometimes enjoyed his presence on their own, by picturing spiritual images of him within their minds. So Krishna feels he could not do anything to change their situation and must remain an insolvent debtor, as he previously described. He should not be called ungrateful because the circumstances render him helpless. So he's describing what can he do when the emotion is at that level. Sometimes you have a relationship with someone who's emotional and irrational, and then we feel there's nothing we can do. If we reason with the person, they get upset. If we, anyway, they get upset. Just like when Krishna bathed in Radha Kund, and when he got out, Radha looked at Krishna's chest and saw her own reflection. But in her state of high devotion, it manifests to the level of man. Man means prema, and one of the high stages where it manifests in anger. And she thought, oh my God, this rascal Krishna has another girl in his embrace. And she became angry. And she was so angry, Krishna tried to reason with her. It wasn't me. It was just a reflection on my shiny blue chest. She couldn't be reasoned. But Krishna became depressed because he loves Radha so much because she has the full capacity to give him pleasure. And then he tried to figure out what to do. So his friend, maybe Sridham or Mother Mangal, said, you just lie. Just lie. Just apologize. He said, but I didn't do it. He said, anyway, she wants an apology. Give her an apology. So he said, I'm sorry. You know, these things happen. I made mistakes. And she just became angry. Rascal, rascal, rascal. Finally, Krishna was so depressed, one of his friends said, just worship Radhakund to please Radharani. Anyway, that's one of the mahimas, the glories of Radhakund. When we go there, we explain. So, that's the height of this type of love and devotion. I think we probably can do one more purport, which I'll read. Eva Mayasya Sitam Natyas Vitasanam Chishanagam Yudhaitasa Invartam Yushmad Udvahe. Therefore, my staying with them would be equal to my absence. Realizing this, I have not returned there. Now, here are the real reasons I married you. So Krishna is going to explain how they felt. And Krishna shows himself to his dear most devotees or remains unseen to them, whether he does either. They will be torn by the ecstasies of separation, and he will suffer the frustration of being unable to help them. Such is the apparent misery of Krishna and his devotees. But there is another level of this transcendental reality, unseen to ordinary eyes. Krishna lives eternally in Vrindavan in his invisible uppercut manifestation, endlessly continuing to bestow the enjoyment of his pastimes. In some confidential pastimes, he returns to Vrindavan from Dvarka in his uppercut form. Thus, at the same time that the devotees of Vrindavan suffer separation from Krishna's prakat manifestation, they continue to enjoy forever the manifestation in which his pastimes are uppercut. Some subtle hints of this have already been spoken by Krishna. Quote, I can never fully repay those devotees, and so I am utterly indebted to them. Text 96. Quote, just by seeing me, they become so dazed and bewildered by ecstasies from deep within. Text 95. And, quote, whatever measures I take for their happiness will only double their grief. Text 96. Elsewhere, the evidence for Krishna's secretly returning to Mathura Mandala is more concrete. In Srimad Bhagavatam 111.9, the citizens of Dwarka mention Krishna's trips to Hastinapur and Mathura Mandala. And the ladies of Hastinapur, referring to Krishna's perpetual presence in Mathura, speak in the present tense. Quote, Aho alam shlagnatamanyado kulam, Aho alam punyataman madurvanam, Varesha pumsham vashabhapriyastriya, Svajanmana chankramanena chanchati. Oh, how supremely glorious, glorified is the dynasty of King Yadu, and how virtuous is the land of Mathura, where the supreme leader of all living beings, the husband of the goddess of fortune, is marking the land by his birth and wanderings. So this is the ladies of Hastinapur. And this is after Krishna left Vrindavan, but they're talking about him as if he was there. So this is evidence that he actually did return. The women of Mathura city also talk about Krishna's being present, still in Braja. Vinya Hata Braja Bhavo Narayam Nalinga Udaparana Purusho Vanachitramalya Tapalayam Shabala Vanayam Shavinam Vikri Dayan Chati Garitra. How pious are the tracts of land in Vajra, where there the primeval personality of Godhead, disguising himself with human traits, wanders about, enacting his many pastimes, adorned with wonderfully variegated forest garlands, his feet worshipped by Lord Shiva and the goddess Rama. He vibrates his flute as he tends the cows in the company of Balaram. They also say Bhagavatam 10.14.13. In the Uttarakhanda of the Padma Purana, Lord Shiva relates to his wife an even more explicit account of Krishna's returning to Vraja and remaining there permanently. And in the second part of Griya Bhagavatamrita, the glories of Goloka, the conclusion will demonstrate that Krishna always resides in Gokul. Nonetheless, Krishna chosen not to divulge to Sri Satyabhama and his other queens that he returned to Gokul. Hearing about this would distress them, and he cannot tolerate seeing the devotees distressed. So, a lot of digest in that, in 9:45.
Would anybody like to ask any questions? Would anybody like to say hello?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj.
Thank you, Gil. When there was no questions, I just felt, oh, my God, I was talking to the wall again.
No, actually, I didn't have questions.
I had that experience in Puri where I rushed upstairs to get class in the middle of the festival. I was so exhausted, I was lying on my back. My hands were wailing away. And then afterwards, I complicated myself and said, great class. And then I said, you know, would anybody like to say hello? And dead silence. It's probably my worst nightmare. Okay.
Yeah. Mm.
Go ahead.
Well, first I'm just saying that you retold my favorite story today.
Which is that?
I have a question, but
what's your favorite story?
Krishna gets in trouble even though he didn't do anything.
You really are left wing, Gail.
Oh, I just love that story. Anyway, one question I had, you know, very interesting to hear Fromm's points. This thing I have about, you know, real love is loving, even though, you know, we feel like love means to be loved.
So if you're searching for love, right? If you're searching for love, then real love is to be loving. Yeah.
Yes, so there's two things I want to say.
When you get in the consciousness of the seer, you know, it becomes a selfish pursuit rather than a selfless pursuit.
Yeah, so, one thing is that I just feel that love has to be kind of, you know, both feeling loved as well as loving. And then the other thing is that to just define it.
It does have to be both. But his point was, is when someone psychologically thinks, you know, I want to be loved, you know, and that becomes the pursuit, right, then one's ego can be in prominence and not actually experience love. Okay.
Yeah, well, it would be nice if you elaborated more on that, but I want to say that if you just approach love as, you know, loving, like you were giving an example of marriage, you know, where it develops, and I don't know, it just kind of makes it sound as though it's some kind of mechanical process so that you could just end up really just loving anybody. You just serve that person long enough, no matter who it is.
Yeah. Of course, I wasn't quoting Bhagavatam, I was quoting Eric Fromm. So, interesting. Yeah. But I guess you can see his point, though. It's you know, it's not just an infatuation.
It's not just sentiment.
Yeah, it's a relationship that develops. And obviously, you know, are conditions for the relationship to develop with some kind of compatibility, some kind of attraction, you know. So I think what he's talking about is how things have become overbalanced and perverted, you know. And, yeah.
Too much emphasis on the sentiment and not enough on the service.
I think so. And I would also have to, like, I found it very difficult reading, but I was reading it for a seminar I'm giving soon. So I felt a little difficult reading. But I did understand that point, you know, how there's been such a shift
and that the initial infatuations and things like that, they don't last. They're based on bodily considerations that change, you know, because the material pleasure becomes satiated. You know, it reduces because it's not a purvita, it's not unprecedented. So the first time, wow, this is new. Then the second way, you know, and eventually one becomes satiated. So he's trying to extend, even within this world, that love should be at a different level. You know, that there should be some. He gave some examples. I have to read the book to that's the basic principle. But not that, you know, we're not looking for someone also who also loves us. It's part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, love is great. It's, you know, actually the ability to reciprocate with your love. Well, that's part of the attractiveness of someone that they're giving. Yeah. Okay, what else do you want?
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisance. This is Dr. Carl. I have a question this week, also about love.
Okay.
By nature, we seek the highest love, and by nature, we seek the greatest happiness in love.
Right.
The highest love is love in separation, or when the imminence of separation is so great that, you know, one feels that separation even in presence, love in separation.
Yeah.
But the greatest happiness in love would seem that to be when the object, when one knows that the object of one's love not only is there, but will always be there, will always be present. So, I understand that sort of contradiction.
You know, I would have to look through the book. Because as you realize too, this was a wonderfully edited book, and there was something in those purports. I don't know if I could find it so quickly. Because obviously, in a loving relationship, you don't search for separation. You know,
mm-hmm.
You don't say separation is the highest ecstasy. Get lost. I won't see you in 20 years, so I can enjoy. You know, otherwise, you know, you get like a whole. You can make a whole comedy routine on Vera Bob. You know, like I have to give this one to Gail because her husband's a big Rodney Dangerfield fan. You know, so you know. He said, what did he say? He said, I came home. My wife, you know, my wife asked me for $5,000 for home improvement loan, you know.
Mm.
I gave her money. She asked me to leave. <You know? laughs> That was the home improvement, you know. And we wanted to do some home improvement. She asked me to leave.
I'll ask him if he knows that one.
What's that?
I'll ask him if he knows that one.
It was something like that. My wife asked me for $5,000 for home improvement loan. She asked me to leave. You know. So, you know, it's not that kind of separation. But you know, if I can find it in the. If I can find it in the purport, it dealt with that. You know, it's a real balance between, you know,
mm-hmm.
that the separation is the highest ecstasy, but, you know, it doesn't diminish the union, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like, you know, Gorgo Vindemarge's, he wrote The Embankment of Separation, described it as a, um, he described it as an embankment, so there's also an embankment of union. And we know in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's ecstasies, keeping the river of prema flowing, his two associates, Ramananda Roy and Sukhbamadar, would keep it balanced. If he's in too much separation, there was union. If there's too much union, there's separation. They would keep his mood balanced. And even in Vrindavan, you know, Krishna spends half the time out in the forest and comes back home. So they each experience separation and union. So it seems to be a requirement. But when love is fully manifest, you know, then one can truly experience separation. And it burns to the, you know, it brings it to the highest degree. Well, I read, so I don't know if it is, this is the part, but I can't. Krishna's verse is referring specifically to his own ecstasy and separation from the residents of Vrindavan. But his description equally applies to their ecstatic remembrance of him. But to be more correct, it applies to the Brajvasis with the exception of the young gopis. These gopis are never relieved for a moment from the tension of Vraha Bhav, since even when together with Krishna, they never in they're in anxiety about losing him. They never lose touch with this ecstasy, so there is no reason to think about regaining it. Yet they do not consider their pain of separation a goal for anyone to strive for, because it burns them more sharply than a million forest fires. Here it is. Hey. Let me read this purple here. This is in verse 128. I don't even know if I'm... This is actually going a bit much. I don't know. What verse should I read today?
It's 97.
Okay, so this is actually going ahead. These things will be discussed. I have no idea how I found it. It said, the neophyte mind may still be confused. The mind may think, according to the axiom, that pleasure leads to pain and pain to pleasure. The abandoned joy felt of an elevated devotee in prema bhakti is bound to give way to the disappointment when circumstance change, and in this world they always do. The more one is elated now, the more one will suffer depression later. Premananda is greater than the ecstasy of worshiping God in mere reverence, and certainly more greater than ecstasy than personal identification with the Supreme. Therefore, when the bliss of prema is interrupted by the pain of separation, one is plunged into the world of distress. To dispel this conclusion, Krishna now conclusively proves that the apparent pain of Viraha Bhava is in fact pleasure. The hearts of devotees absorbed in Viraha Bhava are unavoidably compelled to seek more of it. They cannot tolerate losing this ecstasy. They like to be in separation, but there's an ecstasy, a feeling of love for Krishna that they don't want to lose. Mm-hmm. Krishna's truth there is simple. How can anyone's heart feel the urge to suffer more and more pain unless that pain is really pleasure? Mm-hmm. Outsiders may perceive a devotee's ecstasy as suffering, and the devotee may speak and act as it were. The truth must be just the opposite. Judging from the strength of the devotee's urge to continue suffering, Vraha Bhava, that must in fact be the ultimate happiness. A material example may help clarify this point. Although the coldness of ice is the opposite of heat of fire, ice placed on one's body may feel as hot as burning coal. In this example, the burning sensation from the ice is illusory, numbing coldness real. Similarly, the pain of Vraha Bhava is a false appearance, disguising the reality of indescribable joy. The difference between the ecstasy of separation from Krishna and the common sensation of being touched by ice is that the deep feeling of Vraha Bhava is known only to a few, to Krishna. Anyway, this isn't exactly the purport, but something was there. But at least we know that, and now a deep analysis is coming up in the coming weeks. So stay tuned.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Maharaj. I also want to let you know that in Iowa there are still ice cream trucks playing their music through the streets for the children.
Oh, my God.
And in Metuchen, too.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, just when Carl was going to get everyone to move from that horrible place in Jersey to Iowa, you counter it by describing the inconceivable bombers of New Jersey. Okay. And one day I'll be able to pronounce the place you live. I won't even say it because I'm going to say it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Govardhan Mathuras.
Okay, Hare Krishna Govardhan, thank you. If you brought those things over to Gop Kishore, I'll probably pick them up the next few days.
Yeah, okay. I think that's today.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Okay, anything else you'd like to say?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Henry, hello. Jai. I should give you a call this week sometime so we can plan our schedules. Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello?
Maybe Boma, right?
Hi, Boma, the Indrani. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I have another call. I'll go now. Okay, thank you all. Hare Krishna.